Famous story this week. Creation of the world. Everybody knows the story. And in the Midrash for God creating woman and man, the Midrash says that God created humanity due parts of feet, of two-face. Now, that doesn't mean that we're two-faced. Right? There was a face on one side of the head, face on the other side of the head. Male and female created he them, according to Torah. Originally, we were just one person, male and female. And since there were only two people in the world, God created all of humanity, right? With one being. Could the symbolism be clearer? There's another Midrash that says that God took earth from the four corners of the earth, dirt from the four corners of the earth, of different colors. You know, red clay, dark soil, white chalk. And God put it all together and God created humanity. So we all come from all four corners of the earth. We are all of us all colors. Could the symbolism be any clearer? You see, in the Torah, it would seem that all of humanity is one big being. Differentiated, of course, but originally and intentionally, one large being. The Bible has a covenant. You all know that. The Bible establishes a covenant between God and the Jewish people. And that covenant was established with Abraham for all of us. We are all of us in it if we're Jewish. We are in it according to the Torah and the rabbis now and forever. Why? Because one human being many generations ago established it. And if you drew out that chart, you know, there'd be Abraham at the top and the rest of us somewhere down, right? Way down, 40, 50, 100 generations later. But we all go back to the single human being named Abraham. And that covenant was not just with Abraham, it was with Abraham's entire family. You cannot get out of that covenant. But the interesting thing about the covenant, even though it was created with one person, said it's created with all of us simultaneously. And when it happens, when the covenant is enacted, it is enacted with all of us. One person can't mess up the covenant. But all of us can. In other words, the covenant, the scholars call it corporate. What they mean by corporate is the body of the Jewish people are involved in the covenant. God responds to the Jewish people in our entirety. And interestingly, that was the conception of humanity among human beings right up until the Renaissance, about 500 years ago. People were part of humanity or whatever group they were part of. The individual, it's not that the individual didn't exist, but the individual was not nearly as important as the group. But as we all know, with the Renaissance, the individual comes into play, the concept of an individual. The individual's mind, the individual's fate. And from the time of the Renaissance until now, that strength of individualism, that thought of individualism, that somehow we are essentially one human being, and that's the essence of what it means to be human, and then we go from there out to other people, has been the concept of humanity, and most particularly, interestingly, in the United States. If you look at our literature, the shows that I grew up with, right, my favorite was The Lone Ranger. Dun, 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 dun. Anyway, The Lone Ranger. Why The Lone Ranger? The detective. That's another big American myth. The individual, the rugged individual who can do it all on his own, doesn't need the help of anyone else. We Americans, above all, conceive of ourselves as being first this body. And then, if we choose, extend ourselves. Interestingly, in the American psyche, it almost seems to be a weakness to think of ourselves as dependent upon others. I get arguments all the time from people when I say, you know, I don't think that's true. I tell you, I just don't think it's true. I don't think that essentially we are, in fact, individuals. Now, I know none of you are connected, right? I mean, you all walked in here separately. You could all walk out differently. In a certain sense, you're all individuals. But I don't think that essentially that's what it means to be a human being. When I look at language, we all share a language that we were given by a community. Why look at cultural norms? We all sort of behave in the same way. We all dress sort of similarly. We all have similar values. When I look at these things, I think, you know what? We're really not individuals. When I was young, I had a beard. I was a great individualist. I and everybody I knew had a beard. We were all of us individualists in our own minds, with our bell-bottom pants and our rebelliousness on college campuses. We were all of us being individuals in exactly the same way. The truth of the matter is, I believe that we are, in fact, the corporate body of something. Hasidism is a very interesting movement. It's a late medieval Jewish movement. I say late medieval because modernity, as we know, the intellectual movement of modernity, kind of never got to Hasidism. It has a conception about human beings that comes from the late Middle Ages. And you all may know that politically in the Jewish world, Hasidim and Reform Jews don't get along very well. I mean, our movement is always getting battered by them in various places in the world. And we have to really try to hold our own, not least of all, of course, Israel, but also in former Soviet Union, Germany, other places. There are political squabbles. And yet, it's a really beautiful theological movement. There are, so to speak, neo-Hasidic Reform Jews. Madonna, for instance. No. That was a joke. Madonna, I said. I mean, Hasidism has brought to us this phenomenon known as mysticism. Hasidism is the primary conveyor of mysticism in Judaism in the modern world. Madonna, by the way, has no idea what she's talking about. But Hasidism is this beautiful religious movement. And the primary text of Hasidism is a book called Likutei Amarim, which is generally referred to as Tanya. And for the last few years, the great sage, Adin Steinsaltz, who many people think is the most brilliant Judaic scholar since Maimonides, has been translating Tanya with a commentary into English. There's now three volumes out, and I've been reading them since they came out. Steinsaltz has the good grace to issue one each year when I'm just finished with the one that he came out with last year. It's very kind of him. And this book, Tanya, is summarized in the 32nd chapter, which is in volume 3, interestingly. And in that 32nd chapter, the author, Schnur Zalman of Liadi, talks about what it means to be a Jew in terms of not emphasizing the self. You see, he says that there is an I, but that I has to be ignored in favor of the universal I, not E-Y-E, but self. And that the more we get into the self, the more we lose that sense of God. Like before the Enlightenment, like before the Renaissance, the Alter Rebbe, as he is called, Schnur Zalman of Liadi, says that the focus is not us, the center of the universe is not the human being, the center of the universe is God. The primary commandment is to love your neighbor as yourself, meaning, in his sense, to love every Jew, by the way. Why? Because we focus on the body. We focus on our pleasures. We focus on whether we are in pain. But we focus, therefore, on the self. At this moment, I feel famous. At this moment, I feel honored. This moment, I feel despised, or I feel put down, or whatever it is that I happen to feel, it's about me. And that's how I respond to the world, out of me to the outside. When we dwell in our physical pleasures, the pleasures of the body, we focus on ourselves to the detriment of the other. When we focus on secondary satisfactions, power, fame, honor, we're likewise giving in to this notion that we are simply a self. I find it interesting that 30 years after I wrote sermons about greed, because in the Reagan era they were saying greed is a good thing. I don't know how many of you remember that. And the movie that came out, Extolling Greed is a Good Thing. And it took 30 years, but now the financial markets have collapsed because of that idea that became popular 1981, 1982. You see, when we focus on the self, however we do it, we're focusing on the ego and what it is that can exalt our importance. Shneur Zalman of Liadi says that to achieve true happiness, we must nullify the importance of these qualities. Last Shabbat morning, I argued in a sermon that it doesn't really matter what happens to us, whether it's good or bad. The question is how we react to it. I mean, good things are going to happen in everyone's life, and bad things are going to happen in everyone's life, and we don't always even know the difference right away, do we? I mean, something happened, you know, it seemed good at the time, and it had really bad consequences a year later. I don't know about you, but I was seduced by the stock market. I thought, you know, stocks will always go up. That's what I was told. I know a lot of people who believe that, virtually everyone I know. Didn't work out so good this past couple of weeks. But why? Because we just want a little bit more. Just a little bit more. But the truth of the matter is that it doesn't make any difference whether there's pain or joy. These things are going to happen to all of us. The question is how we respond. If we believe that one person is somehow superior to another, we really don't believe that you should love your neighbor as yourself. What we really believe is that somehow we're better. And Shneur Zalman says, if we cannot achieve true equality, we will not be able to discover God. That we are all part of Adam, and we are all of us equal. And so, Hasidic society is in theory, and I think largely in practice, very egalitarian. Because age and class distinctions ought not matter. My question is, can we in fact take the focus off of ourselves? There's a story of Rabbi Leibele of Eiger, who was the grandson of one of the great, not Hasidic, but Orthodox rabbis. And he became a Kotzker Chassid. And he moved to the town of Kotzk. And they sent another rabbi after him to try and find him. And he couldn't find him because he wasn't dressed up. And he got into a group of Hasidim. And as he approached this group of Hasidim, a man approached, very impoverished looking. Very impoverished looking. I mean, just dressed in rags. And all the Hasidim stood up as he approached. And this fellow who was on the search for this other rabbi said, well, is he a great Torah scholar? They said, no. Man doesn't, hardly knows Mishnah. Said, well, is he very wealthy? Does he support the Jewish community? No, you can see how he's dressed. Well, does he come from a great family? No, it comes from the lowliest family. So then why did you all stand up? Well, he's a very humble man. What appears to me, he's got a lot to be humble about. Why would you stand up? It's easy to be humble when you come from his circumstances. And they all said, no, no, no. It's always difficult to be humble. Because we emphasize the self. My question is, can we really change our thinking? Tanya sees all Jews as if we are the root of a single tree. The tree is Knesset Yisrael, or the roots of a single tree. The tree is Knesset Yisrael, the household of Israel. The Jewish soul that unites all of us. The unity of the Jewish people is then a matter of caring for one another. Each Jew's problems is the problem of everyone else, and it diminishes us all when anyone has a problem. So Shlomo Zalman says that if my arm hurts, I don't cut it off. I take care of it. If my leg is giving me a pain, I don't simply forget about it. I put a salve on it. And so it is with Israel. But now I'm going to make this a reform idea. Because in Reform Judaism, it's not just about Jews, is it? It's about everyone. And my question is, can we shift our focus as human beings away from the self so that we see ourselves as outlying planets of a solar system in which God is the center of the system and every other human being is a planet of equal worth? We cannot achieve this perspective until we come to see ourselves as part of a larger body, not as separate individuals. If we use others to meet our ends, if we use others as some sort of an object, which psychologists call self-object, if the other is there because we have needs, we will never understand God. Even if we become angry with others because they're being unreasonable, we're not understanding them for them. We must understand the other as part of ourselves and then treat them as we would treat an injured arm or leg. Come to the aid of the other who is in pain. One last point about this. Can the other do anything he wants? No. Interestingly, in Judaism, we are all commanded to give tzedakah all the time. It says if somebody was used to having people run in front of him, in front of his carriage, if he becomes impoverished, you should set him up at that level so that he's not ashamed. But the other side of that is that someone who can provide for himself 14 meals a week shouldn't take from the community. Only when he's down to less than 14 should he take. And so what you have is, it is incumbent in Judaism upon the individual to care for himself, but it's incumbent upon every individual to see everyone else as part of the community, part of the self. We can help others when we acknowledge what is best for all of us. And we can help ourselves the most and see God when we acknowledge what is best for all of us. In Viktor Frankl's book, the great psychoanalyst Viktor Frankl, there's a story about a man calls Frankl in the middle of the night. And Frankl talks to him from 11 p.m. or thereabouts till 3 a.m. And the man says he's going to commit suicide, and Frankl talks to him about the meaning of life. And the man says, no, you haven't convinced me. Frankl meets him at a cafe. And they talk, like I said, until early hours in the morning. And the man decides not to commit suicide. And Frankl later says to him, what was it? Was it my great theory about the meaning of life? No, it wasn't that. Says, was it my arguments, you know, about psychology? No, it wasn't that. Was it anything that I said? No, it wasn't anything that you said. So then why didn't you kill yourself? He said, because a complete stranger came out from his home and met me at a cafe in the middle of the night. You cared about me more than I cared about myself. When we connect, we meet our true humanity, and in that we find God. If we walk the wrong path in life, we will not arrive at the right destination. If we don't have the right lenses on, we will not see the past. My great worry is that individualism says that the reality is that we are all of us separate, and the truth is different from that. Hasidism, with all of its issues, teaches us that we are just a part of a whole. And only when we go in search of the whole can we find the self. Try considering that you are not just you. Others around you truly are a part of you. And if they cause pain, it's only because they are in pain. And their joy is your joy. Their needs, your needs. And if you're searching for God, you will never find God alone. You will only find God in the midst of the community. Kein Yehi Ratzon.